Welcome to the Good, the Bad, and the Sequel Q&A. My name's Doug. So the next sequel that we're covering is pretty rad. If you haven't seen it, you need to. It's Guyver 2 Dark Hero. You can rent it $3 anywhere. There's actually a version of it on YouTube as well. But if you got the $3, spend it. It only helps out people that worked on the movie. And this is the very rare that we record the review before I record this. And oh my gosh, me and Jamie had such a blast. So many questions. Admiration for a lot of the things that we saw in the movie. And of our guest this week, Kathy Christofferson, who plays Corey in the movie. Some amazing behind-the-scenes stories that she provided when it came for her getting the role. Like, she wanted to be the one that we talked about, was that kind of looked like Angela from Who's the Boss. Like, the bad... She wants to be the bad girl that has the mohawk. That was always a dream of hers, to play that type of role. But they saw her, and she was Corey, and she was born to play that part. And what we talked about during the interview was... Obviously, she was working, doing commercial work, doing theater leading up to that, but that was a big deal, you know, to land a role when you're the star of the film. And, man, she's so great as Corey, absolutely amazing. It was so much fun, and we talked about some other great stories, and one of my favorite parts of the interview, besides hearing stories about Craig T. Nelson, Michael Madsen, her filming, you know, working on Californication, a cool story about that, and it was very interesting. But my favorite part was I got to talk to her mom. There's so many times that I talk to people, and I always ask the question, like, hey, how would your parents think of when, you know, you went out? And you only hear that one perspective from, you know, in this case, the kid, you know, the child, and how they feel their parents took it. But to hear her mom's, like, answer, it was great, like, to hear that point blank. And she's 93 years old. God bless her soul. She's amazing. Her mom, that was just so cool that she popped on for 5 minutes to just talk about, you know, what that was like. Her daughter going from, you know, outside of Chicago all the way to California, out to LA to pursue her dream. Really awesome stuff. So, yeah. So before I start the interview, if you're new here, please subscribe. Please follow us on all social media at Sequels Only. Share with your friends, your neighbors, even the guy that you don't like that lives down the street that leaves his cans out all the time. What's up with that guy? Do you have a guy like that? I bet you have a guy that does some kind of quirky thing on their lawn when you walk around the neighborhood and you're like, yeah, this is something. It's like the Burbs, but that's what it is living in neighborhoods. You have to create these scenarios that just make the days a little bit better. But so without further ado, here is such a fun person to chat with, and I truly enjoyed the hour. It's up there, one of my favorite ones I did. Actress Kathy Christofferson. So it all started for you. You grew up in Chicago, like in the city area or in the suburbs?
I wish. I mean, listen, I love where I grew up, but sometimes I feel a little ripped off because to me, especially now, suburbs seem like a big shopping mall, kind of, you know, that's what I like it too. But I grew up in the suburbs, and it's interesting that you ask because I tell everybody Chicago, and then my Chicagoan friends are like, you're from the suburbs. I'm like, shh, you know?
Yeah.
But the second, I think before I even got my license, did I have my permit? I was taking that like 73 Mustang downtown and like, you know, getting to know the ropes. And so I spent as much time in Chicago as I possibly could, but I grew up and went to school in the suburbs. Yeah.
Cool. So at what point was it that you were like, I want to act? Or was there something else that was like the entryway in that? Like any like theater or playing an instrument? Or was it right going on stage?
Yeah, actually, it was a funky evolution, really, because, and my mom is here visiting for the first time in a long time.
That's awesome.
And I tell everybody this, though, because this is the honest to God truth. I think my really deep fascination with acting and wanting to be a part of that world was because she and I used to watch the old classic movies together. So we would cuddle up. We go in my parents' bedroom and we turn the lights out. We just watch all these old movies and we cry and we'd laugh. And my dad would be watching a Bears game downstairs and he'd come in to check on us and he'd just open the door and be like, okay, you go. And she'd tell me who all the stars were. And it just really, it kind of romanticized the whole thing for me.
Oh, yeah.
But I just inherently felt like I wanted to be a part of that. And then the short story is that, you know, I did little things like puppet shows when I was really little. And then I was asked to do this this voice play. And then I, this is all when I was in single digits. I replaced an actor in this show that she got sick and it was my first time on stage and I was just like, whoa, this is amazing. I loved it so much. And so one thing led to another. And then I became a dancer and in high school, in junior high and mostly high school, I got really involved in dance. So at some point between high school and graduating college, I went to U of I, Fighting Illini.
No, nice.
What is my life going to be? Like, I did really well in school. I love dancing so much, but what's the future there? You know, am I going to, like, teach? Do I really want to teach dance? Am I cut out for that? What kind of dance am I going to do? And if I'm an actor, the world is kind of my oyster, you know? I can do what I love, and I can do it forever. And it's getting really close to forever. So that was pretty spot on about that because I'm still doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was your first steps to, you found, hey, this is what I want to do. What was your first, because Chicago, it's like when you think of like the sex, you know, nowadays it could be anywhere in the country. Like, anybody could, you know, do a self-tape and get an opportunity. But really, then it was like New York, Chicago, or L.A. Like, yeah, those were the three places. And so really, did you start in Chicago doing the theater there?
Or acting classes there? Because honestly, it was barely Chicago back then. That's really how far we're going back. It was barely Chicago. Theater was great. But I graduated from Illinois and I got what's called, I guess, a cognate in theater. It's like a minor. And I went back to the suburbs and to my parents' house. I unpacked from 4 years of college. I repacked my car and I headed out to Los Angeles. It really was like that. But in the summers during college and a little bit in high school, I would do everything that I could. You know, I had, at that time, you could have multi-agents, which was interesting. You just had like tons of agents in Chicago, not LA, but in Chicago, you could do that. And so, you know, I got my SAG card. That's what I asked for my graduation gift. And so people were asking for cars and TVs. And I'm like, all I want is my SAG card. That's what I got.
What'd you get it from? Like a commercial or for like a TV?
Yes. I got it from a McDonald's commercial.
Nice.
That was my first national commercial. And and it made me eligible and I didn't want to wait. You know, back then, it's a different generation right now, and I really hope it changes. And I get it. You know, everybody has this idea. But the truth is that it will circle around. And when I was coming up in this business, it was an honor and a dream to have your SAG card. And it was the only way that you could be taken seriously as a professional. And I still feel that way. I know some younger people don't. I think it's a really big mistake because eventually they're going to go, we need rights, man. And then they're going to understand how hard people have fought for the right to, you know, have be supported by a guild. But that was my dream. And I was taking classes downtown in between years in college. And I was the youngest one and everybody was a professional and they had their union card. And so I just wanted to be in that crew. And so I did it right away. So I came out here with a SAG card, which is kind of cool.
Wow. What did mom think of this the whole time when you packed up the car?
What do you think about that, all that, mom? When you want to come answer that question, you can just go around here. We are in like Wedding Central right now, and we're freezing cool. her to death because we brought her into the back building where we, we specifically did because the Guyver poster is up there, but where the heat is just coming on, and my poor mom is freezing to death. She lives in Florida.
Is she still in Chicago, or did she go to Florida?
No, she's been in Florida. Here, you want to just come?
Oh,
here,
well, that's why right she's here. Cold.
Pop in. You could just sit right in the edge here real quickly. And
hi, Mom. How are you?
Say hi to Doug.
Hi, Doug. How are you doing?
Hi. Pretty good. Pretty good. I was asking your daughter if you were supportive of when she went out to L.A., when she packed up her car.
Oh, definitely. She was a cheerleader when she was just a little one.
Oh, boy.
And she was always seen to be on stage, even then.
What did you think, Mom, when I said I got back from college and I was like, I'm going to L.A., I'm moving to L.A. across the country to be an actor?
I thought, oh, God help me. What did I do wrong?
There's the answer.
I actually think that's a lie, but okay, maybe.
No, I was worried. My little girl, she's always been such a fabulous little gal and young woman, and she's going to go all the way to L.A. It worried me.
It was your movie days, she said, watching those movies and cuddling up and watching all those old films that inspired her.
That's right.
Yeah.
But I knew after I thought a little bit, she'll make it. She'll do it. She'll survive.
That's awesome.
I was raised in Chicago, so I was rough and tough and hard.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's great. Rough and tough and hard to bluff. That's good. You need that.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing all that.
Oh, I
yeah.
Think I
thanks for
forever.
Yeah, you become, can if you want.
an old lady star.
You might get bored. She might start to get up. When we get into the nitty gritty about Guyver and all that, she'll be like, oh.
But I wouldn't snore. But I will leave. I can take a hint.
Okay.
it was nice to meet you.
Thanks, Mom. I love you.
That's awesome. That's so cool. So do you have any contacts out there? Was there somebody that you knew from Chicago or from University of Illinois that you knew, like, hey, at least I have someone I could talk to out in L.A.?
You're bringing back all sorts of memories, man.
I like that. Because it's scary to go to a new city. Like, me and my wife moved to Portland, and I had her. And even when we went out there, we're like, do we know anybody out here? Because it's kind of like a different, you're going on an adventure, you know?
But you know when you're that young, you're invincible, and you just...
Yeah, that's
true.
For me,
I was kind of... I don't want to say I was a loner, but I just would, I loved to explore. And so it is true. I was a cheerleader and I was the captain of the cheerleading squad my last year in college. And we went to we were in the ESPN cheerleading final championships.
Oh, cool.
And so we had just all come out here as a squad from Illinois. And it was really cool, but that was down in San Diego. And I was like, oh, we got to go to LA for a couple of days, you know? And I was so excited. I just wanted to see the Hollywood sign. I'd never been to LA. And I'm like, I'm going to move here. So I want to go see it. And so, so I had such a, I was so inspired and so excited that I didn't have any fear at all. And I did know two people. No, actually, I didn't know one of them that I was going to live with, but she was my boyfriend's ex-girlfriend's sister.
Okay.
And she was kind of doing some acting stuff, but she was training to be a pentathlete in the Olympics. And she was living in a little place right outside the Santa Monica Pier. And she said, you could be my roommate. So I had a place to stay. And then there was one guy that was in the last acting class I took downtown Chicago, the one that I said everyone was a little older than me. And he was out here trying to be an actor. And within about, I don't know, less than 6 months, I'd just say a handful of months, his roommate was moving out. And so we got a place together in Hollywood. And so it was kind of cool. I didn't know him well. And we became friends and we were roommates for a while. So those were the only two people I know. And then I met someone who was very active in the community who was just telling me what acting classes to go to. And he really gave me great advice. His name is Johnny and he's still my friend. And
that's cool.
He was the very first person that I met. Yeah.
That's really awesome. So what was the first steps from there? So you got a place, you're out there, you know, some people, you're getting recommended acting classes. How did you find representation out there? Or like, were you just going to open casting?
It was tough because I got out here. Imagine being young and so as excited as I told you I was. And I got out here and it was during a writer strike and the town was dead.
It was 84? 84 was this?
I'm here.
Right?
It was
88. 84? 88. Okay. Yeah. Oh, wow. And, that's not cool.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, what's happening? So I immediately, I got involved in an acting class and I got myself cast in a play immediately. And nice. Then, one of the guys that I was doing this play with, he was so nice and he referred me to his agent and they signed me. And it just kind of snowballed from there. So, you know, I just got, I settled in a little bit and then I got my first agent from doing that play. And then the writer's strike was over and it was just off to the races.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause what was your first credit? Cause there's like two in the same year. Was it Murder, She Wrote or was it Hard Times on Planet Earth? Those are both 89.
Whoa. No, actually there's, you know, some credits that are not on there.
I'm sure they're not. Yeah. No, there's some series that don't have them on there. I don't know why. There's like some weird. Yeah. It's never right.
I probably at some point, I think an agent was got me to take a lot of credits off because they're like, they're going to think you're like 100 years old, you know?
I know, which is ridiculous.
It's so silly. But I mean, I worked on it. What was my first? Honestly, the first TV role as a guest star, not like, you know, a super, super small part. I think it was like this crazy show called The Judge where they did reenactments.
Really?
They did reenactments of like courtroom cases. It was like one of those kind of like, you know, those shows. I feel like that was my very first credit in LA on a TV show. I'm trying to think, but yeah, Hard Time on Planet Earth. I guess that came around pretty quickly. And what else? I should have my
resume. Murder, She Wrote. It's like the first time you have a name credit was Step by Step in 91 as Rachel.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. And Murder, She Wrote was a funny one because that first acting class that I took, there was a guy in there who became, you know, that I started dating and he was an actor and we went in the Murder, She Wrote called for a young couple that was picnicking and they discovered this dead body and we were both so excited, you know, and we decided to create a whole little scene around it. And we asked to go in together in the audition and we went in and we did our whole little scene and the casting director, who's a pretty big casting director, was like, "Get out of here, you two. Get out of here." And I'm like, I think he was saying that, like, he liked us. I don't think it was really like, this is crazy.
Get
you know?
Out
and
he cast here. Yeah,
us.
Yeah.
He cast us. And it was really funny. So it's funny because I still stay in touch with him. And he sent it, a friend sent it to him recently. And he sent it to, he texted it to me on my phone. And I was like, oh my God, so crazy. Just crazy. Yeah, we were newbies, such newbies. And I was doing a lot of commercials too when I first got there. I seemed to start booking commercials immediately. Yeah.
Well, that was the good money back then. Like from when I talked to people, it was like, everybody's like, oh, the commercials. This guy, Peter Jason, who's like a big time character actor, been acting forever. That's what he was saying. He's like, Doug, those commercials, man. He goes, I lived in New Jersey for a year because they wanted me to do all these commercials like deodorant, shaving. He's like, they paid so good. And then they stopped. I don't know when it stopped, but I guess they figured out a way not to have to pay people or something. But
that's a whole other podcast, trust me. And probably a worthy one. it's pretty tragic for actors. I kind of missed the I kind of missed the crown jewel when it came to, there was an era when I was just about, when I was kind of taking classes in between college years.
Yeah.
A lot of the people that were older than me were putting themselves through college from one commercial and buying houses and all that. And by the time I got here, that wasn't really happening. But I have to say, it was still, there was still a, it was for several years, lucrative enough that I just, you know, I was so busy that I would just get checks and then I would put them, I would deposit them and get checks and deposit them and do my thing. And then I'd look at my balance. I'd be like, oh my God, where is that my money? You know, like I wasn't even really paying attention. So I guess in fairness, it was still really lucrative, but unless you get a campaign, like a, you know, flow,
Oh, my God. Flo, and I was, have I ever seen Flo or the Toyota woman, which I know, I've never seen it, or the AT&T girl, who's actually a pretty good actress. She's in a bunch of stuff, but it's like, these people have been on in these commercials for years. They
They're
must
all
be
doing so well. Loaded. And I actually worked on one of those Toyota spots with Jan. She's a Groundlings.
Really?
She's a Groundlings gal. Yeah. And I worked with Roy.
Oh, that's awesome.
Roy was my husband and he was a big Groundlings guy, super, super tall. And the whole time they were like, oh, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I guess I better go to school at the Groundlings, you know. it was funny. They were friends before. So everybody kind of knows each other. And she does really well. And God, I'm spacing out on Flo's name. She's really nice and very talented.
Yeah, and she's in stuff too. But it's funny, ever since she got that campaign, because she was in Ben Stiller's The Heartbreak Kid. But maybe they're just like, hey, here's a ton of money. You don't need to be in any movie. You just need to, because you don't see those people anymore, really.
Well, she doesn't, she looks very different in without all that makeup on.
She looks really different
and just super cool. Really nice lady. And so still you can get those kind of campaigns, but the, you know, the days of generally just, you know, booking nationals and, you know, getting super wealthy are pretty much over. They're outliers, and that's about it.
I know, especially with like micro ads now, with people not having the attention span. There's like 10-second commercials on YouTube and all that silly stuff. But back to you, which is really wild, because the beginning of the career, like, it's really cool because you had all that stuff that was going on right away. You get out there 88, and then 89, you hit the ground running. But it's pretty wild because the Guyver happened pretty early.
Yeah.
Like, you were only there for a handful of years and you get a monster role. And it's funny because I only saw that movie because I interviewed Peter Spellos, who was in the first one.
Oh.
Because the first one had like JJ Walker was in the first one. It was really interesting. So I watched that one. Yeah. Which was so wild. Yeah. And so when Peter told me that, I was like, I'm going to watch that. And then afterwards, I'm like, I'm going to check this other one out because it's like a really, it's like a cult following, which is pretty cool. Was it was just the 40th, the 30th anniversary. So what was that like being watching that movie again?
You know, really, it's not shockingly, more surprisingly fun. I was really looking forward to it because it became a an unplanned reunion for a lot of cast and crew members. Not everybody, but it was just like people would catch wind of it and be like, I'm going to go. And originally, Steve Wang, David Hayter, and I were going to do a Q&A after this screening. And then somehow we just got on this thread and people got added to this thread. And I feel badly because it happened so quickly that not every single person from the cast and crew, of course, knew about it. But it was like an hour away. And so we were not thinking. Steve kept saying, I hope it's not going to just be the cast and crew, you know, like one of those screenings. But we didn't really care because we hadn't, you know, some of us hadn't seen each other in a while. But the place was pretty packed. It was full. And And the fans are so diehard. It blows my mind. And I also remember that this is a movie that has to be seen on the big screen. You know, you can watch it on your computer, on a TV, but on the big screen, it's pretty great. It's really pretty great for such an it was so independent. It was really pretty low budget, you know?
Yeah. Well, you had somebody that worked in special effects that helps, and his career is pretty wild too, because he was part of he was the guy that worked with everybody's crew, like Rick Baker, Screaming Matt George. And then he got his opportunity with the first one. And then, you know, obviously that was successful enough that people were like, hey, let's do a second one. But how did that come to be? Like, was that just a regular open casting call, or did somebody say, hey, you should audition for that for you? Yeah.
Oh, it's pretty wild. At that time, I was pretty diligent about looking at things. There was a thing called Backstage West at the time. And so actors could look in the back of Backstage West, and they would have casting listings. And I was living with my martial artist boyfriend at the time, and he was teaching me badass martial arts, and I was getting good. I was getting good for a little person, right? Because I'm pretty petite, but I've always been athletic, and we were really into it. And so I guess I just had a hankering to put it to use, right? So I'm looking in this Backstage listing, and I see this movie, and I see one of the casting. I completely skipped over Corey, the lead, and I looked at, there was a character called Sten and had to have martial arts skills. And she was this badass. And I'm like, that's me. I'm Sten. And that's what I submitted myself for. So I take my picture and resume and I mail it in, old school, right? And I get called in, but I get called in for Corey. And I was like, I had this attitude when I was younger that, you know, I wanted play these like really cool roles. I wanted somebody to give me an excuse to have a mohawk, you know? I wanted to be like the grungy. That was during the grunge era, you know? I wanted to be grungy. Yeah. I wanted to be the drug addict. I wanted to do all that stuff. And the industry just wanted me to be the lead lady, you know, the big smile and all that stuff. And so I was having a little bit of an attitude, and I'm like, fine, I'll go audition for it. Now, this is something I never knew all these years, but at that reunion screening that we just went to, when we were doing a Q&A, Lisa Hannon, who was the casting director of Guyver, I never knew this. She had cast me in this movie, this really cool movie that I was supposed to do with, was it Roddy McDowell? Like, with all these really cool people. And it was a legit awesome movie, and something fell apart with it. And so she got my picture and resume, and she goes, why is she, they were going to call me in for the character that I was, you know, applying for. And she goes, why is Kathy Gustavson reading for Sten? She should be reading for the lead. She should be reading for Corey. She's awesome. Blah, blah, blah. I just heard this story. And I was like, wait a second. I'm looking at Steve Wang, who's become a dear friend of mine. And I'm like, you were going to call me in for Sten? Really? Like, just because I thought I should play Sten doesn't mean you as a director. Like, you look at me and you're like, this is Sten. So anyway, she was responsible for me coming in for Corey. And I went in and I read. I did my homework. I did my audition. And Steve was like this. The whole time. He's like, thank you. And I went home, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I was so mad. I like walked in the door. I dropped my bags and I said, I don't know what these people want. I did exactly what was called for. I was Corey. I did exactly what Corey is supposed to do. I'm not going to do backflips. I'm not going to dance circles. I did what Corey would have done. This is ridiculous. I was just mad. And then a couple days later, we'd like you to play Corey and Guyver. So anyway, you know, that's Steve.
Yeah. Oh my God. So what was it like that shoot? Because obviously you said it had a lower budget, but was it like a guerrilla shoot? Like really like 2-3 weeks, or did you have more than that for everything involved?
God, how long was it? Do you remember when they talked about how long it took? Because it was like 6 weeks or something. It was,
oh, you know, that's good.
It was like, I think the budget was like 900,000, but it looked way huger. And I think that's just because it had so many. I mean, Steve's, don't tell him I said this, but he's a genius. And he was, you know, putting all his genius into it. And he, I mean, Alpha Stunts, you know, Koichi and all those guys were, they're the best. They're incredible. And he had, Steve had so many truly talented people in the cast and crew. And they, everybody, and I forgot because the shoot was so long ago, but I think everybody really telling stories a couple weeks ago with everybody, I realized that there was a lot of talent there and everyone was really dedicated and everybody was really like, it's so rare to be on a set like that. People, I don't remember anybody being at odds with each other. Everybody had fun. Everybody helped each other. Everybody just worked and worked and worked and didn't complain. And yeah, that's, when I was thinking about it when we had that reunion and, you know, I've been on some great sets and I've loved it, but that was a pretty cool, rare moment making that film. And I think that's why it looked like it did for, you know, a $900,000 budget, which is relatively super low.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And it shows because obviously people are showing out and still caring about it 30 years later because they probably you could see that through the screen that people worked well together. Everything looked good. So that's really neat. No, it's so funny when it comes to the special effects or people that aren't in front of the camera. It's like when they first not like it was his first directing gig, it was like his third or fourth. But whenever they get a chance to direct people like that, they like want them to succeed. So they call in a favors to their buddies. So like a $900,000 budget, he could have probably had somebody be like, hey, can you do this for a day? Like you see that with so many people that are like stunt drivers and they get the opportunity to direct. Like people are like, hey, we want this guy to win, so we'll do something super cheap. But no, that's really cool that you had the chance to rekindle because it's like when you're filming a movie and you're on set with people for, you know, 5-6 weeks, you're like a little, it's like a little summer camp. So it's cool. 30 years later, you guys can get all together and like kind of like reignite some of those memories. Cause I'm sure there's things you said that somebody else is like, oh man, I totally forgot that. So it's really cool when they put those screenings together.
Yeah. We were so fortunate that it happened and that so many people were there. And I know a couple of people were really disappointed because they didn't hear about it. And I felt terribly because it was a fast and furious kind of thing, how it evolved like that. And yeah, I told a couple of people, why don't we just have another reunion up at the farm?
Yeah.
And I'll have Chris, my other half, just put after the wedding, of course, and we'll just put a big projector screen up in the middle of the yard and we'll invite like all the rural community to come see, but we'll have a reunion and everyone's like, oh, you know, okay. So who knows? Maybe we'll do it. It'd be really fun.
That'd be awesome. That'd be really cool. I love when they do the screenings nowadays, like in where the movies were filmed. Like they did one for Troll 2 when they'd made that documentary like 5-6 years ago. They went out to Utah. I think where they filmed The Sandlot in Utah, like they get together like every so often with like the cast and stuff. I think it's so cool because for the actors, sometimes when you have movies like that or like Lightning in a Bottle, sometimes they don't, especially with kid actors, some are like, hey, I don't want to do this when I get older. So it's like this cool thing. You see these people get together, like I mentioned, you know, reignite those memories. It's pretty neat. So that must have been so cool. Now, what kind of premiere did you guys have for that? Somewhere in LA? Like, were you able to see yourself on this big screen?
Yeah. I don't really remember. Oh, I'm going to get in trouble. You're going to get me in trouble. I don't remember where it was. I feel like it was in the valley somewhere, but it was in a theater. It was in a theater.
Cool. That's good. You guys had one. There's some movies that don't do that, even like bigger budget ones. So that's pretty awesome. That because that's important too for everybody to see that product. Because you know, like when you do stage, you see the audience's reaction right when you say your line. But with this, you work on something, you're not seeing anything until you see other people enjoy it or you read reviews or.
And I, you know, I did forget that it did, you know, listen, these movies are, you know, we love them because they're kitschy and, you know, you have all these outrageous situations and monsters and, you know, whatever. And that's one of the reasons I think some of us like it. But on the big screen, I kind of forgot how cool so many things looked. I mean, I was just like, oh, yeah. And I remembered that as a newbie, I had never actually been cast as a lead in a movie. Well, I had, but it hadn't been made. And so it was my first experience. And I would show up to set and sometimes not know what to expect. And I'd walk into, you know, there was a soundstage in Van Nuys. And I walked into this big cave. And I'm like, this is amazing because it was so good that there was no acting required. You just respond to what you're seeing. It was really neat.
Now, it is cool. That's what I don't like about green screen nowadays. In so many movies, you could tell, like, I get why they're not really imagining. Like, I don't believe that they're in a cave or an outer space. Not like an outer space, but in some of the scenarios, you're like, they can film that down the road. There's probably a road they could stand on and do this scene, but it's like, oh, no, we're just going to, you know, put him on a green screen, CG him standing in front of a gas station. And it's I think that's what's missing in some superhero type movies. It's just they might be really good visually, but there's like not like that feeling. That's why I love 80s, 90s movies, because you knew everything you saw was what the actor saw when they were filming that scene. Like,
yeah, it is kind of a bummer, isn't it? I mean, I appreciate, making any movie is so hard.
Oh, yeah. To
even make a, like, mediocre movie is hard. And, but it is kind of a bummer because it loses, it kind of loses that depth and texture and that, you know, I don't know, je ne sais quoi, what you feel when you're watching it. You know, there's a detachment, I think.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Yeah.
So another movie. So that was really cool. That was a great story. The audition, like the fact that you found that on like Backstage West, and that's pretty neat. But
it seems so one random, movie did, right?
Oh, I know, so random. I like that's random to see it on there, but it was meant to be, you know. And the fact that the person casting that was the same person that cast you in the other movie that didn't get made, you know, it's. Just a perfect storm of, you know, great things that happen for, you know, that to you get that role. But a movie that you did, and I think it's pretty cool, the connection that you have, I guess, with Michael Madsen, because there was a documentary that you were interviewed for, right?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Look at you doing your homework.
I have only heard great stories about people that worked with him. But that movie you did with an executive target, not even only him. Keith David, Roy Schneider, that's like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. I was the only non-star in that cast, really. There might have been like one or two others, but there were some pretty big stars in that movie. Yeah. I have some fun stories about that movie. And
is that
how I got
Is that the first time you met Michael? Was that the first time you met Michael Madsen?
No. So, see, we're both from Chicago. And my friend Jeff Gordon used to have this great group where we'd all meet at the Four Seasons Hotel, a bunch of Chicagoans who were in the industry, and it was called City, Chicagoans in the Industry. And every month we would meet there, have breakfast, and he would find somebody who had made it pretty big from Chicago in the industry to come have breakfast with us and then talk a little bit about kind of like what we're doing, you know? And I tried to go every month, you know, I didn't make every single one, but I made this one. It was Michael. And so he was talking and then I asked a question and he I don't remember what the question was, but I asked a question and he just sort of like started talking to me. Like it was only the two of us in the room. And he was like, he said some very nice things about me. And I was a little embarrassed because these are all my peers, you know, I'm sitting there and he's like, oh, you're a really beautiful woman, blah, blah, blah. And you look, you remind me of so-and-so, you know, I was like, oh God. Anyway, back to my question. I went up to him afterward to say hello and introduce myself. And he said, you know, I'm trying to put this movie together about John Dillinger, and you'd be perfect for the half Indian character. I think the woman in red, it's, you know, I think that's who it is, you know? And I was like, great. So we stayed in touch, and he had me go to the library, and I'm like renting out, I'm renting the old movies about John Dillinger. I'm reading all these books in John Dillinger. And sure enough, I was doing a movie at the time. I was on my way to a set to another state to do a movie, and the movie got trashed because the investor bailed with all the money. And would you believe it was the same investor who was going to do the John Dillinger movie with Michael?
Oh, no.
I got trashed on twice. I mean, So I'm on my way to Kansas. I'm shooting something in another state. I don't remember where I was. I think, where was I shooting? I was like in Florida or somewhere. I can't remember where I was. I was shooting somewhere, and the production was flying me to Kansas instead of back to LA because I had to shoot this movie. And they're like, don't fly to Kansas. And it's the same person who bailed on this film that bailed on Michael's film. So anyway, my dreams were crushed. So one day I get a call out of nowhere. This is probably like a year or two later. I get a call out of nowhere from a casting director. They're like, Michael Madsen has recommended you for this lead in this movie. Can you read for it today? And I was like, no, I cannot. Could you bring me a script? You bring me a script tonight. I could read for it tomorrow. So the casting director hand delivers me the script, right? And I read the script. I show up the next day. I don't think Michael's there. I don't think Michael's there. I read for them and I leave. And I'm going down the 405. I'm 20 minutes away, and the casting director calls me on my phone. He's like, "Where are you? We were supposed to wait out in the hallway." And I'm like, "What? I'm on the 405. I'm like 20 minutes away." He goes, "Can you come back?" And I'm like, "I'm really far away now." And he goes, "Well, can you just come? The producers want to see. They want to like talk to you, and they want to like have you read again. Can you come to the set tomorrow and read with Michael?" And I was like, wow. Okay, it was their first day of shooting. It was their first day of shooting. And this is for a lead, right? And
So
I show up the next day, and Michael had said to me, and he had talked about this at the Four Seasons thing. He said he told a story about Thelma and Louise that he didn't want to read for it because he said he's a really bad auditioner and he won't get the part, that just sit down and have meetings, right? So I get to the set. Michael's in his wardrobe. He's shooting. He comes into the trailer, the producer's trailer. I'm there. I'm reading. They're watching my demo, and they're watching scenes from Guyver. And he's going, "Look at her. Look at her." Again, I'm like, "Oh my God, this is so embarrassing." Again, right? And so he goes, "Kathy, do you want me to read with you? Because, you know, I'm not a great reader, but I'll read with you if you want, you know?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I want you to read with me. You're the character. You're right here. You're in your wardrobe. Yeah. Of course I want you to read with me." So he reads with me. And I was like, "Oh my God, you're right. You are so bad at auditioning. This was like, I should not have had you read with me. Like, what are you doing?" Like, it was really bad at reading for the audition, you know?
Yeah.
So I go out and they tell me to go out and wait. Some other girl comes in. Michael comes to my trailer after, and he goes, "You booked the job." I'm like, "Okay, cool. So this is how I need to, for my credits to be." And he goes, "Oh, you got a lot of balls." And I'm like, "Yeah, you got to make sure I have like single card. So really like two Chicago people, you know, just really, he was very good to me. It was a crazy film, you know, but everyone was good to me, but he was really good to me. And I had a blast with him. And I, you know, and I'm really, they asked me to be in that documentary, which was awesome. But then a second editor came in, and when they made it into a movie, like it's going to supposedly be like a series of movies, like
okay,
kind of like But when they made it just a movie to screen, I got cut. I was really hurt. I was really bummed out because I had a funny story. And I had a funny story. I won't tell it to you because hopefully this, the producer kept saying, you're in it.
Yeah,
you're
hopefully
in
it's in
you're
there.
Great.
Yeah.
Everybody loves you. You know, you're, it's like a five, you know, segment thing and you're in one of the segments. And I'm like, okay. So they invited me to the screening of that movie. And I just was like, so great. Quentin Tarantino talks for like 15 minutes. And that's one of the reasons I got cut. But, you know, he's funny. Yeah. Funny. Yeah, yeah. So what can you do?
But he could have given a minute or something for, but hopefully your story is like a five part series. Yeah.
I hope so. I hope so. They keep, they, you know, they told me that, but I don't really know what's happening with it. You know, just, it was a good experience and, you know, he's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool they did the Chicago thing. That's what I was trying to like get to before, because during that era, like just before you were coming out there, like in Chicago, that's when like John Cusack, like all those people were in high school at that time and they filmed Class. So I talked to James Dumont. Does that ring a bell?
Oh, yeah. Wait. He's
from Chicago. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. He used
to, because he told me that story about the Chicago thing, like in LA. He's like, yeah, all the Chicago people from Chicago would get together and they would just like shoot the shit. So I don't know if it was the same setup. I don't know if it was like, you know, an actual like breakfast sit down, but he told me that.
Maybe it could be. I mean, you know, Chicagoans kind of, you know, they somehow gravitate toward each other. It could be. I didn't know James at that time. So it could very well be the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool that they do that, because you know, you're in a new city. Obviously you make friends and you know people from being on jobs, but it's good to like, it's like that weird thing. Like you're on vacation and I run into somebody and they're like, oh, I'm from New Jersey. It's like this weird kinship. That like, it's like, all right, we're cool. Yeah. Like we're the same. So it's cool, especially when you're going into an industry that has so many people battling for one role, that you have people that can give you like some kind of advice, tell you some of their stories of ups and downs. So, no, that's cool. That's really neat that you met him through that and it worked.
Yeah. I feel like it brought that event, that monthly thing brought everything down to earth. You know, because you, I guess whenever you're from the same town, Chicago in particular seems to be very grounding for people for whatever reason. But yeah, because people, someone explained it to me so well one time. It was about roots, you know, people, there's just something about the roots of Chicago. But I always felt like anything was possible when I went to that event, because these are my peeps. These are the people I grew up with. I understand that language. And, you know, when I moved out here, I didn't know that Chicagoans had accents. I had no idea. I thought it was New York and the South. And then, you know, from another country. And I had to work on it. And now I've gotten lazy. And so you can hear that I'm from Chicago, but I was bad. When I got out here, I was like, my name is Kathy. I'll be over here. It was really nasally, you know, and everything was like that, you know. I wasn't so extreme, like, you know, I'll be in the French room. It wasn't that kind of Chicago, but but, you know, it was extreme enough that I should have known. And somebody had to go, no, that's not going to work. You have to work on that a little bit.
Yeah. You got to fix that a little bit, yeah. So obviously, like, I think I mentioned this when I emailed you. Like, I love hearing people's origin stories, the beginnings of their careers. Obviously, there's a ton of credits after this point. But do you have any favorite role? Because I think, like, looking at you were in some really cool shows over the years, like Dexter. I think it's always cool whenever you're on a soap. I talked to a lot of soap actors that do it either in the beginning of their career. Or obviously, you know, in the middle, and it's like such like a different world, especially for you. Because was that your soap you did? That was the first time you worked on a soap, The Young and the Restless, in 2012.
Okay. So that was crazy. I kept getting flown to New York to to screen test for regular roles and As the World Turns and a few times for that. And I, you know, I probably would have done really well in a soap at the time, but every time I would get to New York, it would be me and a whole bunch of blondes. Like, I was the brunette that they were considering, but they wanted a blonde.
Yeah.
I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but it's really hard work. And by the time I did that soap, it was a casting director that remembered me from New York. And she's like, oh, you know, she came to LA and she was hell bent on giving me a gig. And, you know, it was listen, I was so lucky that the actor I worked with, he had been in soaps for over 30 years, and he was a real actor's actor, and he wanted to go and talk about the characters and everything, which I loved.
Oh, cool.
But the director was not nice, and it was really fast and furious. And
I know, it's like boot camp because they want to get done.
Yeah, I know. And that's like in TV shows and everything, but there was something that was really cold about that experience. And I actually hated it. I hated it. And I think that like most actors will, you'll adjust. If you were to be, I only did a couple episodes. And so I would adjust and find my way. And then you get your whole system, but it is a real different format. And I thought I would love it, but by the time I actually worked on it, I hated it. I was like, oh, this is awful. I really prefer movie making. I like making TV shows and stuff. But movies, I can't say the more independent, because listen, I would love to do some A-list movies. Sometimes I look at these things and I'm like, you know, people don't understand. When you're working with a great director and all that money and really good actors and you're trained, it's still hard work, but it's like the best case scenario. It's awesome. So many times you could be working with a lot of talented people and there's no money, or you could be working with some money, but there's not, you know, it's like his sister or whatever that he cast and, you know, she doesn't know what she's doing. You know, there's so many things that could go wrong. And you have to be practically a magician to make things work, right? But there are some independent films that I've worked on with some really talented people. And those have probably been some of my favorite experiences, just because a couple directors, like writer directors, have written things for me. And when somebody writes something for you, it's the best, man. It's the best. Yeah, because, cool. You know, you can bring all your stuff to the roles you get cast in, but it really is a lucky break when somebody just happens to get a role that was perfectly suited for them. And I often, you know, haven't felt that way, but there were a couple of people who wrote roles for me and I just felt like I could do no wrong. Like I was having a blast and they just let me riff and they let me do my thing and you come to life, you know, you're not like, nobody's trying to box you in. And so, you know, it comes to a crazy film called My Trip to the Dark Side. And then we did My Trip Back to the Dark Side and he virtually wrote that role for me in the follow up, and I had a blast. I mean, I played a jerk. But
well, that's what you wanted to do. You wanted to be that person. A jerk. Exactly. You'd want a mohawk. A jerk with a mohawk maybe would have been better.
Yeah. I played a fun jerk. I played like a wacky, crazy, you know, person. And
wow,
and
great like cast. Steve, who did this person know? Sean Kanan, Courtney Gaines.
He's been around. That's real. Yeah. He's been that's around. Great. Yeah. Yeah. He got awesome. Great people. He cast the people he wanted to cast. And that's why it was so fun. And Steve Wang and his brother Mike, when I did Kamen Rider for them, you know, it was a kids' show, CW for kids, but those guys, they pretty much wrote that role for me. And then they really developed it because I showed up and it wasn't supposed to be a regular role. And we were having so much fun. They just kept writing it. And I was having a blast with that. And then there's a little known, and I I brag about him all the time. He's going to be like, what's up? Mike Taylor has become a friend of ours because we've worked with him several times. And he just keeps casting me in stuff that he either writes for me or he thinks of me for, and he lets me do my thing. And he has the funniest bloopers. He has the funniest bloopers and stuff. I haven't even seen the latest thing, and I know the bloopers are going to be funny because every time we get whatever, like I do what I want, he does, I do what he wants, and then he lets me riff, and it always winds up in some crazy bloopers. And so things like that just make the world go around for actors, I think, you know, outside of, you know, being in a Martin Scorsese film or Quentin Tarantino film, which we'd all love to do and would be amazing. And if they're watching, and I'm sure they are, you know, like, let's get on it before it's too late. That would be incredible. That's the be all end all. But in the meantime, you want to really, you want to make sure that the magic is happening on stage or in movies, whatever you're doing in your work, because it's really hard to be an actor. The business just sucks in so many ways. And there's so much heartache and there's so much rejection and there's so much frustration. And, you know, there's highs and lows and the lows can be pretty low. And so you want to make sure that you get as many opportunities as you can to create and work with people that you love and work with people who are excited about what you bring to the table. So you really get the green light to just like put it all out there, because that's why we do what we do.
No, it's,
I went off.
Like you said, the highs and highs and lows and lows. I think going through all of those, you know, the audition, you know, acting classes, no matter what, it's like, I've talked to so many people, like when you get to a set, like that's what it is. That rush of being like, all right, camera's rolling. And then it's like, this is what it's all for. Like, even if it was a year of rejection or just anything, I think, and you're creating something with so many people. It's like the biggest team sport. And I think people that enjoy movies sometimes forget, or people that just like to hate on movies and just like poke fun at them. It's like, hey man, there's a lot of people that go into one single shot. It's unbelievable when you really think about it. In some of these movies, you think there's not much going on with just a man sitting on a couch with a camera pointed at him, but there's so much lighting and there's just so many people involved. It's like a beautiful thing.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, I tell people, and same with acting. Everybody thinks they could be an actor. It's hilarious. You know, I'm a natural.
No.
You know, no. I don't really believe in such thing, you know, because you can, some people are just naturally charismatic and the camera loves them, but you're always going to be limited if you're not crafted, in my opinion. And maybe that's because I kind of come from a theater background, but you know, it's only a matter of time before something goes down. And if you don't have an arsenal of crafting and you don't have a whole bunch of stuff in that toolbox, you could really fall on your face hard. It could be painful. And if you do, you start pulling stuff out. Sometimes those are the magic moments, but some, you know, there are moments that are inevitable that you'll just say, oh shit, that did not go well. You know, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. You have to know what to do. You have to fix it. You know, it's interesting.
Well, another thing that's, I think is pretty cool is you were in like the, like in my age, like watching like, you know, like the cable shows, it was like you were in all the Entourage, Californication.
Oh yeah. I was in episode 4 and 5 on the first season of Californication.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't know what it was yet. That's my point. We didn't know what it was yet.
And, really?
Yeah. Do you want to hear a story about that?
Yeah.
So I get called in to read for this role, and I had never done any nudity. It had come up a couple times, and I have nothing against it at all. I just didn't feel comfortable. So it just never, I bailed on, you know, auditions for things that were, you know, I mean, I guess it had been Stanley Kubrick, I probably would have like been, okay, cool. This is like, yeah, it's art, you know? But for TV shows, I'm like, it's not me. There's all these women who are super comfortable and, you know, they that's their thing. I just always thought about my dad, you know, like my dad's going to be like, I can't do it. And it was really like, I'm not even saying this is a good thing because I actually have always been a little ashamed of this, you know. If it was theater or this great movie or something, but it hadn't come up. So I get this audition and there's nudity required. And it seems like I want to know more about this. And one thing led to another. And I auditioned for the part and I got the part. And then because it was a brand new show, the producer, who's a pretty big television producer, I'm sure he does other stuff too, but he just, you know, his name is kind of a big, and he calls all the cast members. He made the mistake of calling me and saying, listen, you know, this is a new show. It's really important to us that everyone, and this is before all these like, you know, sex coordinators and all that, you know, became a thing just, you know, recently. I mean, they existed, but it, you know, there wasn't a lot of protection. And so, he said, I want all of our cast, you know, our women to feel, all of our cast members, men and women, to feel really super comfortable. So let's talk about the nudity. And so there was just one scene that where my husband and I are having sex on the bed and Duchovny is trying to steal our dog. So he's crawling around and we're having sex. And I was like, listen, here's the thing. If you want me to feel comfortable, I'm just not like I'm not like a stripper chick, you know, I'm, you know, a petite. I would feel really sexy in like a little bra, little panties, you know, like whatever. And just leave it at that. And I promise you, I'll feel a lot sexier and I won't feel uncomfortable at all because I'm just not like, it's not, I'm not, I don't have that kind of body where like, you know, I don't really have a stripper's body. So that's what I said to him. And he goes, okay, that's what we'll do then. And I was like,
wow.
Oh, it worked. God. I really didn't, I didn't really feel comfortable. And I should.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
I had an ex-boyfriend who was, he's a rocker guy from, you know, he played for Aerosmith for a few years. And so he had seen it all. And he's like, Kathy, you have an amazing body. Just do the role. You know, just do the role. Like everybody's doing it. He's naming all these huge stars, you know, just do the role and stop being such a little sissy, you know? And so I was like, okay, I think that's why I took the part actually. But it wasn't in my heart. Like I was really nervous about it. I didn't want to do the nudity. And so, and I had been around for a long time at that point, you know? So I somehow finagled my way out of it. But this is what happened. I got there. I like a little bra or whatever, a little, you know, they do the thing. And I was working with Robert Merrill, was playing my husband. And he was great. He was so great and so funny. And he and I were just, he was saying the most horrible things and I was saying the most horrible things back to him. And I came with all these props. I was like, I should be doing a crossword puzzle from the New York Times while my husband's behind me and I should be ignoring him. I should be watching TV. I have all these ideas. And the writer was loving it. And then they panicked because they were running out of time and they were going to get a meal penalty and they did. And so then they took away all my props and it was just like sex, right? That was just one of our scenes. So when I got to, and this really is a lesson, when I went in for ADR, which for people who don't know, that's, you know, additional digital recording. And so you're seeing on the screen and you have to like put in sound, like some of your voice and some of your lines maybe weren't heard. And I was like, where's our scene? Like it's all David Duchovny crawling around looking for this dog and you don't really see us. And I was like, what happened to the scene? And I'm like, oh, there's just one little thing missing. So lesson learned, you know? And we were so fun. Like we were so funny. But that's not why they put that scene in there. It wasn't to be funny. And, you know, then you watch the series and you're like, they were real, like, hardcore nudity and sex scenes for that first season. Yeah. Hardcore. So, oh, well.
But you have a good story about it. No. Yeah, no, I couldn't imagine it. I don't know if somebody said I couldn't do it. Because I'd be like, that's forever in a movie. I'm not against people that do it. But it'd be hard. I don't know. They said, hey, Doug, you can have this role, but you got to, I don't know. I don't think I can. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, like people are like Googling it right now because there's these screenshots. Even from that, there's these screenshots of me Robert, you know, like, okay. But just imagine, like, I don't know. You have to have the constitution. You know, I admire women that are so comfortable. It's a little bit more European. And I just a little bit nerdy that way. So,
yeah, you have every right to be when it comes to that. But Kathy, this has been so much fun. One of my favorite questions to ask at the end is throughout your career, did you ever have any keepsakes from set? Did you like collect things like scripts or wardrobe or any props? Is there anything like that that you collected over the years?
Interesting. Well, I always keep my scripts for every single thing I do. I've even kept scripts from things that I've auditioned for and didn't even realize that I auditioned for both lead roles in Breaking Bad until recently. And I was going through the file of them and I was like, this is Breaking Bad. And it wasn't called Breaking Bad. It was
awesome.
Like Untitled. And I'm like, I read for both the sister, the wife and the sister. And, mom, my mom's talking.
It's okay. Sorry. I can't even hear her. That's fine.
Oh, good. I'm trying to think, surely I must, because I kept a lot of my wardrobe from Guyver, and I remember, and I kind of wore this jacket as an homage, but I kept the actual jacket and a lot of the things, I think all of my wardrobe for many, many years. And I thought, oh, somebody would really like this wardrobe, you know? They'd be like, that's Corey's wardrobe. And I don't know what I did with it. I eventually gave it to Goodwill or something. Don't tell Steve. But, you know, I'm going to think about this. I'm going to come up with something later, and I'm going to be so upset.
And then shoot me an email, and then when I edit this and get it out there, I'll add it in. No, because I've had people, sometimes it's like, oh, yeah. You know, I talked to Stuart Penkin and he looked to his right and he goes, yeah, Doug, there's a closet there that has a stack of scripts. He goes, I don't know what to do. Maybe one day I'll, you know, put the burden on someone that has to take them. And this other guy had like all the the parting gifts from being on movies. They give away like a T-shirt to the cast and crew. Yeah, so he had like a full dresser of those. So, and then some people had some cool keepsakes, but it's again, sometimes it's like, hey, I have those memories. I don't need to have any props from it. But if you think of anything, let me know. But
you didn't just make me think of something. I mean, I do have every script that I've ever done that I know of. I've saved everything, and that's a lot of paper. Craig T. Nelson gave me a gold bracelet engraved when I did an episode of Coach. And I've saved that, of course. It was really cool. I think that he gave it
to super awesome.
The you know, guest stars when they came on. And it was so neat because I was so intimidated by him when I very first start working on it. Because
I bet he's very like 7 foot. He looks like he's 7 foot.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. And he, you know, he was also a film star and I was very young and he was very serious in the table read. And you go to the table read and you know, I always think we're all going to be super friendly. Like we're instant best friends. And some people are just really super professional and they're there to do work. So I was like, oh, he doesn't like me. And then he wound up to be such a love. And I thought that was I think it was a thing he did with all of the guest cast. And I thought that's such a neat thing because that's a keepsake. And it's one of there's a couple things that, Sandy Calora gave he did like a cast of the creature in a thing I did, me and Troy Garrity did, called Solomon Bernstein's Bathroom. And we have a writing joke because he was really super tired. And at the and the very last shot of the entire shoot, he broke these things out to give to all the cast and crew and didn't realize that he was so tired he forgot the N in Bernstein's. So it's Solomon Bernstein's Bathroom. And somebody started laughing. He goes, ah, you spelled it wrong. And he was like, what? He just made all these like cool casts. You know, I have things like that. If a director or somebody from a production gives things, I keep it forever. And cool. And Steve Wang just bought me this book. I'll promote this book for Dom O'Brien because I'm interviewed for this. And Steve got a copy early and I go, I don't have one. And so he sent it to me, which was really super cool. Yeah. Don't tell anybody else that because then everyone will want Steve to send them a copy. But I haven't read it yet. Have you read it?
No. It's really like,
it's for both Guyvers he talks about. And it's a real, supposed to be a real page turner, but you know.
Oh, cool. I'll have to check it out. Yeah. No, that's awesome. It's been a lot of fun. Here's a quick story because you mentioned Coach. So I interviewed this puppeteer who worked on dinosaurs. And he said back in the day, they would have like the cast and crew, but usually it was the crew were in a softball league. And he said the best was when we played coach, it was everyone that was like writers, producers, people behind the scenes. But Bill Fagerbach, Dauber, he would actually show up to play in the softball game and hit home runs.
That was a big blonde guy, right?
Yeah. He was a big, and now he's the voice of Patrick on SpongeBob. Yeah. But it's like so amazing. Like he's like all these other like shorter people, non-athletic, were there. Yeah. And he's like, this guy would show up and he just hit home runs.
Yeah. But that's cool.
Kathy was a blast. Like she found Guyver too, which is very rare. There's not a lot of time for movies like that I've heard stories. Obviously there's always like open casting calls, manager finds out, but she went on back pages and she, you know, looked out for the role for herself. And it's cool, that whole Chicago thing. Like when I talked to James Dumont a few months back, like there's like that kinship with Chicago. I don't know if New York does it or any other cities in the United States when they're out in LA, get together, bring in an actor that has experience to, tell some stories, you know, give some advice. But that's what Michael Madsen did. And it's super, super amazing. She had that experience working with him on the movie. And then hopefully her stuff, you know, her story gets left into the documentary. Because, man, Madsen is one of those guys. Super, super interesting, super quirky. I always feel like he is the guy on screen. Like, I feel like he is Usual Suspects. Like, dancing to... Stuck in the Middle with You, like just that very evil, but like kind of caring. I don't know. Weird, weird combination of words to describe someone, but I'm going to leave it there. So yeah. So your homework, Guyver 2 Dark Hero, free on YouTube. You got the $3. You can rent it everywhere. But man, I did not see, I watch clips of movies whenever I interview someone, especially when it's like a first time watch. I don't want to watch all of it because I want that first time, especially when Jamie didn't see it. I love when we're on the same level of like, hey, this is the first time my eyes ever took in this. And for Guyver too, this thing of beauty, this art that I feel like inspired so many things that we get to in the episode. You're going to watch it and you're going to be like, whoa, Doug, I was not expecting this. A little bit of Power Rangers, a little bit of like Godzilla throwback in it, but definitely lots of fun. Just me and Jamie had a blast. So yeah, so don't forget to review, rate, share our podcast. Follow us on all social media at Sequels Only. And don't forget to check out our website, sequelsonly.com. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, guys.